We have with us live in the studios once again, Jav Parrish and Maria Tomczyk, both formerly with the Youth Estate. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning to you.
All right. Pretty packed week.
Yeah.
Made only more so packed by the doing.
Did you say pack?
Oh, yeah. No, with a K on this one. Doing
elections.
Yeah. I was up till 3:30 actually writing many more thousand words on the election than I really want to think about at this point. And I'll probably go back afterwards and pick out all the typos. But that's up. And we're going to start talking about our election endorsements this week. It's a pretty full ballot, so that'll carry over to next week. This week we'll do the ballot measures, initiatives and propositions, and the non-City of Seattle offices, that is King County and Port of Seattle. And then next week we'll tackle the City Council and School Board. So a lot to get over, and a lot of other things happen this week, too.
All right. Yeah. Sounds like a plan. Starting with the ballot measures, then.
Yes, the ballot measures. First, the state ballot measures. I-1366 is the big one everyone's been talking about. That's the Iman initiative to force the legislature to put a constitutional amendment before voters requiring a two-thirds majority of the legislature or voter approval to raise taxes. If the legislature doesn't comply, then I-1366 will automatically mandate a cut in sales taxes. That could cost the state budget billions of dollars.
Yeah, this basically is Iman's blackmailing initiative to try and get the legislature to do what the state Supreme Court wouldn't allow him to do. They've ruled that his various two-thirds initiatives are unconstitutional, and so he's trying So he's trying to force the state legislature to basically by extorting them into passing a constitutional amendment, which will make it constitutional. This comes from a guy who the state attorney general is now considering whether to file felony charges against after the Public Disclosure Commission board unanimously recommended that he do so in regards to the campaign finance violations and kickbacks from his signature gathering operation he's used for past initiatives and probably this one as well. Tim Iman's a dishonest dude, and really he should be in jail for a number of reasons, but this is a dishonest initiative as well. It's not honest about what it would do to decimate the budget, hurt a lot of people around Washington State. It's a really tremendously bad idea, and hopefully sometime soon, the fact that he'll be a convicted felon will prevent Mr. Iman from voting on his own initiatives.
Yeah, so vote no on 1366. Also on the state is Initiative 1401 to impose stricter penalties on people who traffic in endangered species. That's a very, very good idea, and we recommend that you vote yes.
Yeah,
on that
the downside of this one is that basically Paul Allen single-handedly has bankrolled this initiative. Now, this is better than building a football stadium.
Definitely.
It's better than blocking a millionaire's income tax. It's better than charter schools and corporate privatized education, which are past statewide initiatives that he has tried to ram through. And let's just hope he doesn't pick for his next ballot initiative, erecting a statue of himself playing guitar next to Jimmy. But fortunately, this particular hobby of his is also a good public policy idea. So we say yes.
Mm-hmm. There are also four advisory votes. The state legislature, when it met last time, early this year, passed some changes in the tax code so that essentially to close the loophole on some state tax exemptions that affect the oil and gas industry, the automotive industry, and software developers. And they decided to close those tax loopholes and implement some taxes on those industries. And of course, those industries pushed back and forced these onto the ballot, these advisory measures.
Actually, that's not accurate. This is a result of Tim Iman's past initiative.
Oh, yes, that's right.
That requires quote-unquote advisory measures. These actually don't have any impact whatsoever on the legislature. It's just to remind everybody that that evil legislature raised a tax or fee, basically.
Yeah, so you can skip these if you like, or you can just fill in the little circle that says maintained. Now, some folks may want to not do that in in one of the advisory measures. That's advisory measure number 11, which extends the excise tax to marijuana sales to medical marijuana sales as well. You can look at that and say, I don't think that's a good idea. I think medical marijuana patients should get a break from paying that tax, and you can overturn that. But you could also go the other way and say, well, you know, I think everybody should pay the tax and also vote maintained.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, most every other prescription drug is tax fee.
Your vote isn't going to really change
it. Yeah, so even though it's a bad idea, the vote itself is also a bad idea. So it's a kind of question of priorities there.
Yeah. And then we get to the county measures, Charter Amendment 1. This would make the county council's current law enforcement oversight board permanent. Currently, the law enforcement oversight board was appointed by the county council and is run and managed by the county council. This would make it part of the county charter to have a permanent oversight board of the law enforcement agency. It would add a permanent citizens advisory committee as well. The council...
Oh, it doesn't. One other thing it does, it gives them subpoena power.
Yes,
which
it
is
does.
Huge.
The council would appoint the head of the oversight board, but the other members of the board could be chosen by vote. The board would be able to investigate police misconduct with, as Jav said, subpoena powers and the ability to actually go in and even look at the evidence from a crime scene. So it's a very, very good idea. I recommend, because the King County Sheriff's Department has had so many complaints against it. And we've seen some very, very iffy stuff coming out in the news about things that King County Sheriff's Department members have done. I recommend we vote yes.
And the sheriff in this case, John Urquhart, who's fairly reform-minded, is actually backing this, as are most of the county council members. The opposition is coming, not surprisingly, from the union representing sheriff's officers.
Yeah.
And that's the same impediment that Seattle faces as well. And this would be an outstanding idea to have in Seattle as well.
Yes, it would. We don't. We probably should have something.
Yeah,
like
and the city is currently negotiating with SPOG, the Police Officers Guild, on a new contract. We don't know what they're negotiating with, but probably it's not something like this, and that's a shame.
Yeah. And then there's Proposition 1 at the county level. That's a property tax levy to fund youth and family services. This would fund everything from nutrition programs for low-income pregnant women to services that help youth at risk of becoming involved in crime. A very, very good idea. It tackles the problem of poverty and crime at the early stages, when kids are most vulnerable to doing poorly in school and falling into a life of crime. So it really is a good use of county resources, which are typically county taxpayer money, which is typically used to fund things like the criminal justice system, to tackle the problem at the source.
Yeah, totally agree.
So vote yes on Prop 1. And then there are some fire district. There are a couple fire district funding requests, which you can vote yes on. There's an increase in commissioners for Fire District 28 to 5. Typically, an increase in commissioners means an increase in representation by the public. So we would recommend to vote yes on that. And then a decrease in water district commissioners in District 1 from 5 down to 3. I would recommend yes on that too, since the water district does very, very little there.
All right.
Then there are the Seattle measures. Did you want to talk about those, John?
Oh, yeah. We should probably do that. I-122 is the latest effort by citizens and activists to try and rein in spending and in elections and campaign finance reform. It does a number of very good things. It lowers the individual limit for contributions, although there's unfortunately this and anything else right now can't do anything about the independent expenditures and soft money that's coming in.
Which
we'll talk plenty more about that
law.
Shortly. It does that. It gives more transparency for those independent PAC expenditures.
One of the things I really like about it is it puts limits on lobbying by former members of city government.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it does a number of very positive good government things, but the real center of it is something called democracy vouchers. And the idea here is that each registered voter in an election would get four $25 coupons, essentially, that they could then distribute to the candidates of their choice, and that those candidates would receive that funding in public funding. The idea behind this is that a very, very small percentage of residents and voters in King County actually do the vast majority majority of funding of elections, of donations to political candidates. And the candidates' priorities reflect that, that there's a very small donor class that that influences a lot of these public policy discussions. So this would democratize that quite a bit. It would give a lot more people a vested interest in elections, and it would make viable for more types of candidates a source of funding other than the usual circuit of maximum donation, downtown interests. So it's a very positive thing. It's probably a little scary to some people because it's different. It would be paid for through a relatively minor property tax levy, but there's a lot of scare tactics out there by opponents saying that, well, this program wouldn't be covered by this. Actually, the math works. So we recommend a strong yes on this one.
Yeah. And then the other Seattle, big Seattle measure on the ballot is Prop 1.
Oh, yeah.
Huge, huge transportation bill, which would raise a whole lot of money, but does not give us any kind of idea of what the money would be spent on.
Yeah. This is a $930 million. I was up late working on this. $930 million, nearly $1 billion that Mayor Ed Murray wants for transportation. And, you know, everybody agrees, whether it's cars or public transit or pedestrians, cyclists, whatever, Seattle transportation is a disaster. It needs a major investment and to upgrade a lot of different things. This, unfortunately, is not that levy because all of the money that's earmarked here isn't, with relatively few exceptions, for specific projects. And we've gotten to this point in the first place because there have been these enormous pots of money for the last 15 years. Almost all of the discretionary money that's supposed to have gone to transportation has instead gone into one of two things, either the Paul Allen Beautification Project in South Lake Union, which increased Paul Allen's property values.
And increased the traffic mess in the Mercer Corridor.
Dramatically. Or the streetcar system, which again, is operational only in South Lake Union and increased Paul Allen's property values.
And which tourists love, but is not a transportation solution for helping people get around the city.
Yeah, it primarily diverts riders from existing public transit.
And the expansion of that has been behind schedule and could be a major source of a lawsuit for the city of Seattle trying to sue the company that provides the streetcars because they've provided a product that doesn't work on the system that we've built.
So what we're saying here is that money that in the past for transportation in Seattle has been diverted into real estate projects. Projects that are primarily about increasing real estate values and do little or nothing, or in the case of the Mercer mess, are actively counterproductive to actually moving peoples and goods. And the concern about the transportation levy not having specific projects that that council members and the mayor are forced to spend money on is that that just creates a huge source of additional money that can be rated for yet more real estate projects.
So if they're listening, a good bill would be one that says X percentage is going to go to fill potholes, X percentage is going to go to build more sidewalks in the north and south ends, X percentage is going to go to street improvements like this or that, X percent for signal timing.
Repairing the Magnolia Bridge after 14 years.
Yes, for replacing bridges that have to be replaced, you know. And then a small percentage is going to go for these new sort of showcase projects or for a list of projects that are the things that we would like to see. And here's what those projects are. That would be a good bill. That is not this bill.
Yeah. And for anybody who's gotten this in the mail, you know, when you see a levy that's sends out a 8-page full color mailer, very little of which is actually text, that has a lot of glossy promises that aren't actually in the levy itself. You ask, okay, who wants my money and what do they want it for? And in this case, those are very, very good questions to ask, and there are not satisfactory answers. So we recommend a no.
No.
Yeah.
vote on this. Now, you could say the other thing and say, well, I'm going to take a big gamble and hope that a progressive slate of candidates gets elected for city council, and then they can divert this money for projects that we think are important. But that's a really, really big gamble. And so we recommend that you vote no.
And we'll talk more about that progressive slate. There's actually some really exciting possibilities for city council and for school board. We'll talk about that next week. But we do have do we have time to talk about the county
measure? Candidates? I think so. Go ahead.
I think so for the, at least the county council. And
so first up is the assessor, county assessor, Lloyd Hara versus John Wilson. And because Lloyd Hara has been doing a fairly good job, I would recommend that we vote, that you vote for him.
Yeah, and John Wilson in this case basically is a disgruntled ex-employee, and there's a backstory to this involving a dispute over Wilson allocating additional wages for himself. He claims in turn that there's a dispute over some iPad app. But you know, if you have a he said he said conflict between somebody who's done a pretty good job and a disgruntled ex-employee, then I'm going to go with the guy who's already been doing the job.
Yeah,
Lloyd Hara.
The next position is elections director, Julie Wise versus Zach Hudgens. And I got a robocall this week from the people for Zach Hudgens, which managed to make it sound like it was coming from the county elections department.
Which is really unethical.
Which is very sleazy, saying that Julie Wise had misrepresented her education credentials in the voter's pamphlet. Well, she didn't really do that. She listed a couple of training programs she had attended at Harvard University and the University of Washington. That is certainly above board, and I think that's just fine. But it really goes to show that Julie Wise, who has been getting a lot of support in this race and I think would be the candidate to vote for, has been a target of Zach Hudgens, who I think engages in some pretty sleazy stuff in his campaign.
Let's give a little context here. The only reason the King County Elections Director is an elected position is because Republicans who were annoyed with King County elections after the very close Gregoire Rossi governor's race in 2004, filed an initiative saying, hey, we should have more democracy. We should have the elections controlled by an elected person with the idea that they would get partisan elected officials into office. So the first time that
we've seen that in every race since.
Yeah. Pam Roach and David Irons ran for this office and fortunately lost because they lost to the incumbent appointed elections director Cheryl Huff, who actually knew something about the technicalities of how to run elections. And King County Elections has been pretty scandal-free and quiet ever since, managed the transition to vote by mail very well, etc. Now Huff is retiring. We're seeing another partisan politician from the other side of the aisle, Zach Hutchins, who I've actually liked in Olympia. But this is the danger of having partisan ambitious politicians run for this office. A, they don't know anything about elections, and B, you can't trust them because they have another agenda. And so we're seeing Hutchins engage in the kind of tactics that really are pretty disappointing. And you know, you need to leave the elections to the professionals who know how to run the department, and that would be in this case Julie Wise.
And Wise has the experience, so vote for her. There were four positions at the King County Council. Two of them are incumbents who were running unopposed, Larry Gossett and Joe McDermott, and they're good incumbents, so we recommend you vote for that. Two of the other districts, Districts 4 and District 6, there is some challenge to the incumbents. District 4, Jean Cole Wells versus Roof Orr. Roof Orr is a pretty much anti-tax, anti-government candidate. A Tea Party type guy. I would recommend that you vote for Jean Cole Wells.
Yeah, and Cole Wells has been one of the better people in the Olympia delegation over the years from Seattle. And you can understand why, rather than being in the state Senate, which controlled by wingnut Republicans, she would want a pay raise in a much saner environment in King County Council. Yeah. And she has earned that promotion. So I would strongly urge people to vote for Cole Wells in that district.
Yeah, in District 6, you have Republican incumbent Jane Haag versus former Bellevue Mayor Claudia Balducci. I like Claudia Balducci. I would recommend that you vote for her.
Yeah, Jane Haig, you may remember back in 2007, got popped for a DUI in election year, but I think it was Richard Pope. It was one of the perma candidates was the only person running against her, and she nearly lost anyway. But she's been caught on film since then, abusing a police officer. She's done any number of unsavory things in addition to, you know, the usual Republican obstructionist tool nonsense. Really has not had a significant challenge since all this has happened over the past 8 years. Balducci is that challenge, and she's a relatively conservative Democrat. She is from Bellevue, but she'll be a massive upgrade over Haig. So Claudia Balducci for that one.
And let's save the Port Commission for next week because we're running a little tight on time.
Okay. So all of those picks and the Port Commission and the school board and the city council are at jav.org and on Facebook.
All right. And then moving back to items from this week, there was quite a scandal in the paper regarding PACs.
Yeah, regarding Triad Partners, a Triad Partners senior vice president, Brett Allen, had approached Jonathan Grant, the
intern. He was an intern.
No, he was a senior VP. When you get to that level, you're pretty well trusted by the company, I tell you. He had approached city council candidate John Grant, who was a former executive director of the tenants union, late last week, saying to him, look, if you can talk the tenants union into dropping its lawsuit against Triad Partners' development project of a plot of land opposite City Hall in downtown Seattle, if you can get them to drop their lawsuit against us, we will make sure that this new PAC that's being created to help fund Tim Burgess, your opponent in the city council, in your city council race, for $200,000, we will make that go away. It was a very nasty quid pro quo that he was asking for there, and he managed to by a text message involve Mike McGinn to try to get this deal done.
Yeah, McGinn was being used as the intermediary here. First of all, let's talk about the project. It's that massive block wide pit of land between Third and Fourth north of James. This is public
Cherry.
Land. It's actually owned by the city of Seattle, and Triad is the company that's been retained to develop it. And the lawsuit is because it's not being developed for public use. It's being developed for million-dollar condos.
Yeah, and the tenants union would like to see some affordable housing there.
And that really tells you all you need to know about the current political climate in Seattle and who's running Seattle and city council and the mayor's office, that kind of valuable central public land is being used for a very, very narrow segment of the public and to enrich a wealthy developer.
And Triad Partners has been trying to develop it, but they've been having trouble getting financing, first because of the economic downturn, and now I think primarily because of the lawsuit. There aren't too many banks that are going to step up and give financing to a project that's got a lawsuit like that against it in the city of Seattle.
So the mayor's race 2 years ago was essentially between two different sets of developers, the downtown folks that like Murray and the South Lake Union folks that like McGinn. Murray has really consolidated his control over that, which is why we're seeing Murray-affiliated candidates running in 8 of the 9 city council races. We'll talk about that next week.
Yeah.
But you can see why a development company would want to use McGinn as an intermediary. He's kind of an interesting figure in this because he's been very visible for an ex-mayor the last couple of years. I wouldn't be surprised if he would like to run for office again in 2 years, maybe for the mayor's office again. And but really can't tap that pot of support. So you're wondering if Murray turned on the development company here, whether he just decided he didn't want to be part. Yeah, where he just decided, and certainly Grant decided they didn't want to be part of a felony, which has turned. I mean, Jonathan Grant's basically become a folk hero for not wanting to commit a felony, which is also very telling about the local political environment. But anybody with two brain cells to rub together understands in the current developer-dominated political climate of Seattle, this cannot possibly be an isolated incident. This is all about, and especially if a development company executive like Allen is leaving a text trail for something like this, it's either the most inept criminal enterprise ever or it is arrogance. It's somebody who expects that this is the normal way business is being done and nobody's going to call them on it and there's no risk to it. Yeah, it's very telling about where Seattle is as a city and the amount of money that's been infused in it. It'll be very, and of course, Ed Murray immediately pulled the city's support for Triad as the developer for this piece of land, but it's still got to go to somebody to develop.
Yeah.
So we'll see where that piece of land is developed, but it also really underscores what's at stake with the city council elections and the different progressives or developer favored candidates running for it.
Pro-development candidates all have a PAC that's raising money in their favor versus the progressive candidates who don't have that kind of backing.
Yeah, and they all have the same consultant, too.
And we'll talk about that some next week.
Oh, yeah, we will.
All right. And there was also a PAC that showed itself last night.
Yeah, the late Friday news dump filed with Seattle Ethics and Election, Neighbors for Banks, the long-awaited last-minute soft corporate money that's going to try and defeat Shama Sawant, who you heard in the 7:30 hour. Pamela Banks is going to be the recipient of the beneficiary, I should say, of that. Bank of America, one of the larger players there, and a number of others. It's not clear as of yet, at least as of 2 in the morning, which is the last I heard, exactly how extensive that PAC is going to be in terms of how much money it raised. But you can bet that they've already made media buys and other expenditures that are very, very large to try and get Sawant out of office, out of all of the progressives that the political establishment in big money in this city are worried about in terms of being on council. The one that horrifies them the most is Sawant. They want very badly to see her out. And though, even though she did very well in the primary and Banks was backed by quite a bit, they're going to try and buy that election too.
Yeah.
All right. Well, speaking of elections, you've got 2 minutes to talk about the debates this last week.
Yeah, the Democratic presidential debate, the first one. We've seen two Republican debates, and now this past week was the first Democratic Party one. And I just want to say that thank God for Bernie Sanders. I had up to this point thought, you know, I was a little bit worried that he wouldn't do as well in the debate as he did. He clearly, in my mind, won the debate, did a very, very good job of being very authentic, which is something that Hillary Clinton struggles with. She was good at turning aside criticism, except when they nailed her on her connections to Wall Street.
Yeah,
she
that was pretty laughable.
She really had no way to defend herself against that, and she is a very Wall Street-friendly candidate, both she and her husband, when he was in office. He was responsible for the repeal during his tenure of Glass-Steagall, and that's something that I don't think that Hillary Clinton will be able to recover from. And the fact that both O'Malley and Sanders were really putting it to her on that, I think, is an indication of her weakness within the Democratic Party. Now, Sanders, too, you really got to give him credit. He's had a lifetime of work in the Senate proving that a socialist candidate can be a viable candidate, at least on a state level, and work in the Senate with the Democratic Party. It was so nice for me to see somebody on a televised national debate be able to say, yes, I'm a democratic socialist, and here's what that means.
Yeah, and in general, to have a debate in which actual substantive issues were debated.
Yes, and I think that really set apart the Democrats from the Republicans, and I've been hearing a lot about that on Facebook and in other places, too.
All right. Events.
Yeah, this week, today, it's an all-day 2015 candidate forum hosted by the Coalition of Immigrants, Refugees, and Communities of Color. It includes all city council districts, Port of Seattle races, and the director of elections. That's at the Eritrean Association. You can go down there and see how the candidates stack up in terms of issues that matter to communities of color and to immigrants and refugees.
Yeah, I wonder if Pamela Banks is going to tell them that immigrants really don't know anything about our history.
Yeah, that's at 1528 Valentine Place South. That's from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. today. Tomorrow is the Shell No Victory Paddle, initially planned as a protest to try to block the return of the Polar Pioneer to Seattle to offload equipment. Shell decided not to bring the Polar Pioneer back to Seattle. It's going to disembark. It's going to unload its equipment in Port Townsend, I believe, or Port Angeles instead. The Shell No Victory Paddle is going to go ahead anyway. Bring your own boat to paddle with other kayaktivists from 12 p.m. to 3 p.m. tomorrow at Seacrest Park next to Alki Kayak Tours.
That is BYOB.
Yes, that is BYOB, bring your own boat if you can. There may be some spaces for people who don't have a boat, though, so check that out. On Monday is the rally to make Seattle affordable for all. That's with a list of speakers that includes the progressive roster of candidates for city council. So Shama Sawant, Jonathan Grant, Michael Maddox, and Tammy Morales. That's from 5:30 to 7 p.m. on Monday at City Hall Plaza, 600 4th Avenue between Cherry and James Street. You have another event, John?
Yeah, coming up from Thursday all the way through Sunday next weekend, October 22nd to 25th. They did this last year and thousands of people showed up at the free health clinic that will be held at Seattle Center. There will be a line. There is a lot of demand. Get there early.
If you really need it, yeah. Also on Thursday, just for folks who really, really enjoy books and enjoy readings, Lit Crawl Seattle. At various venues, there will be readings by local writers, by youth, women, people of color, authors that you don't typically see being pushed by big publishing companies. Check that out at the list of events at litcrawl.org/Seattle.